From Pacifica Radio, this is Democracy Now!
Commercialism is running rampant. It's corporatizing our universities, commercializing childhood, taking over our elections and government and democracy. It's a collision between commercial interests and civic interests. And if civic interests do not rein in commercial interests, our society will continue to decay, concentration of power and wealth will continue to be in fewer and fewer giant, unaccountable hands, taking control of our economy, our workplace, and our government.
Ralph Nader on reclaiming power from corporations in a world not calm. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. Corporate crime is sweeping the country. Barely a week goes by without new scandals grabbing headlines, revealing long lists of betrayed pensioners, deceived shareholders, bereft employees. In the last 6 months, Enron, Arthur Andersen, Merrill Lynch, Halliburton, Quest Communications, Xerox, and Tyco have all come under investigation for serious corporate crimes. More recently, the telecommunications giant WorldCom admitted it had improperly booked nearly $4 billion in expenses and hidden an additional $1 billion. The admission sent shares plummeting, cost thousands of workers their jobs. The Securities and Exchange Commission filed fraud charges against WorldCom shortly after. It had been called one of the biggest cases of crooked accounting in history. President Bush has vowed an investigation of the WorldCom scandal and said he will not allow high-level fraud to go unpunished. But days before the scandal broke, President Bush hosted a Republican fundraiser co-hosted by WorldCom, underwritten by the pharmaceutical industry. Drug companies paid as much as $250,000 for a seat at the table. Just 2 days before, Republicans unveiled a prescription drug plan backed by the industry, then left debate on the bill early to attend the drug gala. Just 1 day later, the House Energy and Commerce Committee approved the plan. Well, today we're going to hear a speech on reclaiming political power from corporations given by Ralph Nader this past Sunday at a democracyrising.org super rally in New Haven, Connecticut. Democracy Now!, a new organization founded by Nader, is a means to educate and empower people throughout the United States. This is Ralph Nader.
The whole point of Democracy Rising is to bring state, local, and national objectives and groups together so that a major wave of progressive forces can sweep across the country, can regain control of our country, can say there are certain things in our country that are not for sale. Our elections must never be for sale. Our democracy must never be for sale. Our government must never be for sale. This evening, we strove to make this a civic engagement, not a partisan political engagement. We invited by letter and telephone call the Governor Rowland to come, and he politely declined. We invited Congresswoman DeLauro. She politely declined. But we're all pleased that Elizabeth Horton Scheff, who broke new ground on the City Council of Hartford, was here for the Green Party. And Charlie Pillsbury, running for the congressional seat here in the Green Party. Bill Curry, who's got the nomination for the governor, a Democratic nomination for the position of governor of Connecticut, was here earlier. And you see, a lot of these issues, not all of them, but most of these subject matters, most of these directions for a new, just America and its impact on the rest of the world, are majoritarian issues. The majority of the people believe that there should not be environmental racism, where little children are growing up with heavy asthma and diabetes and are being deprived of health care. The majority of the people of this country believe that they should breathe clean air and drink clean water, that there should be decent public transit. The majority of the people in this country don't want to spend a whole portion of their lives stuck in traffic, going to more and more longer commutes back and forth. People say there's a longer average life expectancy in this country than 70 years ago. Not if you deduct the amount of years you spend stuck in traffic. Majority of people in this country want to get dirty money out of politics. They know that corporate cash in our elections nullify our votes. They nullify our votes. So more and more people give up. They drop out. They don't even bother voting. We have to get money out of politics in terms of private interest. We got to have public funding for public elections and an amount of free time for ballot qualified candidates on radio and TV who use our public airwaves. We're the landlords. The radio and TV stations are the tenants. It's about time they pay some rent so we can have our own audience network and our own radio and TV stations, our own reporters to cover what's going on in the neighborhoods, in the communities. It's about time that the majority of the people speak out that this country, whose president says is a number one military superpower in the world, it's about time that the majority of the people say to him and everyone else in Washington that we want to be the number one humanitarian superpower in the world. That we want to wage peace as effectively and aggressively as we are preparing for war. We want to wage peace. That's a very important phrase. It's not taking enough of our energy and our time in Washington. What's taking up is half of the federal budget now. That's discretionary, excluding Social Security and Medicare. Half of the federal budget is the military budget. It's almost $400 billion. And we have no known major enemy in the world. There's no more Soviet Union. Who's the enemy? Ukraine? Moldova? Inner Mongolia? China can't wait to become capitalist. We're cutting deals all around. We're looking for major enemies because the military-industrial complex, as Dwight Eisenhower coined that phrase, wants more profits. Lockheed Martin, Boeing, Raytheon, General Dynamics, all of these companies are unpatriotically exploiting the tragedy of 9/11 to pump hundreds of billions of dollars away from the necessities of the American people into weapon systems that are for the Soviet Union era of hostility. They're obsolete. They're not needed. As a number of retired admirals and generals have pointed out, in and around the Center for Defense Information.org in Washington, log into it. These are retired admirals and generals who fought in big wars. They know what's needed. They know what isn't needed. They know how to define patriotism as love of justice, love of people. And they're speaking out, but they're not getting much mass media. Center for Defense Information.org. This gathering would not have been possible without all the volunteers that worked so hard in the summer on Sunday afternoon and evening to bring people from New Haven and other places of Connecticut together. This is a great achievement. I want to thank the Connecticut Citizen Action Group, the Connecticut Energy Co-op, the Connecticut New Haven Green Party, the Campus Greens, and all the volunteers that made it possible. Especially the grinding work of Jason Kafuri, Greg Kafuri, Mark McDonough, Barbara Payne, and many others. It's very, very important to recognize that a resurgence of citizen power striving for the greatest work of human beings on earth, justice, is possible only when millions of people spend a little time every week on their civic obligations, on the particular pursuit of justice that they have selected. There's so many problems we're faced with in this country we don't deserve, and so many solutions that we don't apply, that you can work on the injustice of your choice. It's not like, you know, national elections, Pepsi and Coke, and those tables represent that. The pursuit of happiness must be based on the pursuit of justice. It's very hard to see a society pursuing happiness if it doesn't have a preface called the pursuit of justice. The definition of freedom, which means participation in power. That's a very interesting definition, articulated by an ancient Roman, Marcus Cicero, over 2,000 years ago. He could have said freedom is an avoidance of injustice. He preferred to define it affirmatively. Freedom is participation in power. By that definition, lots of people in this country don't have freedom. It's participation in shaping the political future, the economic future, the cultural future, the artistic future, and taking it away from the domination of giant corporations who have no allegiance to our country, no allegiance to any country, to any community, other than to control them. They're out of control. They're out of control. And they're now involved increasingly in the greatest corporate crime wave in American history. Every day, a new company, crooked accounting. Every day, the bosses are caught stashing hundreds of millions of dollars and jumping ship while they let the company that they're supposed to be building collapse on the backs of the pension holders, on the backs of the workers who are laid off, on the backs of small investors who now find that something that was worth $68 a share called Global Communications is now worth 10 cents. A corporate crime wave means we have got to demand prosecution, larger prosecution budgets for crime in the suites, crime in the executive suites. Every day, there are people going to jail caught forging $50 checks, $300 checks. People are sent to jail for 5, 10, 15 years, caught nonviolently smoking marijuana. But do you know a single fat cat corporate boss that's been sent to jail yet? Not one. And if there's anything the American people are demanding on talk radio in the last few weeks, it's for the government to turn law and order onto those corporate crooks and make them pay it back and convict them and send them to jail. You know, when corporate crooks are sent to jail, there's going to be more attention to our criminal injustice system, isn't there? Not only will the food likely improve, but there'll be more focus on why. Study after study has shown that if you're black and Hispanic and you commit the first violation, you have a sixfold increase in going to jail than if you're a white of the same age group committing the same first offense. Why is it that we have this prison industrial complex where corporations are building prisons and they want more prisoners so they can make more money? That's not a role for private corporations. There should be no corporate ownership of prisons at all. The theme of these rallies that have been going on all over the country, and you can find out more about them by logging into democracyrising.org, is that people have the power. Who says so? Our Constitution says so. The sovereignty of this country rests with the people. Our Declaration of Independence says so. The Gettysburg Address by Abraham Lincoln says so. Government of, by, and for the people. The preamble to the U.S. Constitution started out, we the people. It did not start out, we the corporations. And we should never let them forget that. And when somebody comes up to you and says, who are you? Somebody comes up, says, who are you? Friendly way. You say, well, you give your name, usually. You say, well, I'm, John Smith, Jane Froman. And I said, well, who else are you? You say, well, I'm a carpenter, I'm a cook, I'm a nurse, I'm an engineer, I'm a computer programmer. Well, but who else are you? Well, I'm a mother, I'm a father, I'm a grandparent. Well, who else are you? You start scratching your head. Well, I'm American, I'm a nutmegger. Who else are you? Well, you know, you're starting to wonder here. Well, who else? Well, you know, I'm a stamp collector. You know, I'm a tennis player. Well, you know, who else are you? Well, you say, I'm a comedian. Or I'm a good neighbor. What are you asking me all this for? I'm asking all this for, to ask the fundamental question, at what point do you answer I'm a citizen? At what point do you answer that you are in possession under our Constitution of the most important role you'll ever play in life other than parenting? Being a citizen. Being a citizen means that you shape the future of your neighborhood and community and city and county and country and world with other citizens. Do you have certain inalienable rights that place on you inalienable responsibilities? That you define the future of the world and the country by the humane values that have carried us thus far over the millennium, over the forces of brutality and corruption and greed. And once you decide to spend more time, as I'm sure many of you have, or you wouldn't be here, on various citizen projects and community projects and going after injustice, you'll ask yourself, what kind of country do we really want, and what can we have? Well, you know, it's not that hard. It's not that hard to see the first stage leap forward that is long overdue. Western Europe has given to its people for the last 40, 50 years the following conditions that we do not have as a matter of law in this country. In Western Europe, coming out of the rubble of World War II, devastated economies, they provided all their people with full universal health care, 5 weeks paid vacation, full paid maternity leave, adequate daycare, full paid family sick leave, decent public transit, and easier ways to form trade unions to lift standards of living even higher. What is the excuse? Where our politicians crumbling before the power of corporations have not done this 42 years later in the richest country in the world. This means we have to raise our expectation levels higher. If they control our expectation levels, they control us. There are college students here. Look how your expectation level is controlled. You take the SAT, you take the graduate records exam. Here's a corporation in Princeton, New Jersey, that has arrogantly defined intelligence and put a number on it. They put a number on it. And when they were asked, these multiple choice standardized tests do not test what you know. They test whether you can answer A, B, C, D, none of the above, some 3-hour morning in April or October that will determine what school you're going to get into, what profession you're going to get into, what trade you're going to get into. They all have these tests. Now these tests are being challenged rigorously, and they're going to be changed because these test scores are, A, given too exaggerated significance by the gatekeepers. These tests do not, nor do they purport to measure the greatest features of success in your mind, in life. They don't test your wisdom, judgment, experience, creativity, idealism, stamina, or determination. And if you internalize these test scores as a measure of your self-worth and self-esteem, you are falling prey to the controlling processes of these tests. And the same is true. The same is true for looking at this way. How many of you have wondered why 15 million college and community college and graduate students in this country, double the population of Sweden, do not have one weekly 30-minute over-the-air television program about all the interesting and creative things going on campuses today other than sports. And it's our public airwaves. We own them. You got to raise the expectation level.
Ralph Nader speaking at the New Haven Coliseum at a democracyrising.org event. You are listening to Democracy Now! We'll come back to that speech in 60 seconds.
Added with power, here they come. International loan sharks backed by the guns of market-hungry military profiteers, whose word is a swamp and whose brow is smeared with the blood of the poor. Quality, who render rage a necessity by turning countries into labor camps, modern slavers and dragons, champions of freedom. Sinister, cynical instrument who makes the gun into a sacrament. The only response to the deification of tyranny by so-called developed nations, idolatry of ideology.
Bruce Barlow, Call It Democracy. Here on Democracy Now!, I'm Amy Goodman as we go back to the New Haven Coliseum where Ralph Nader spoke before a crowd of more than 2,000 people on Saturday night.
The federal minimum wage is $2.35 less in purchasing power today than it was in 1968. We're going backwards. Millions of people working in McDonald's and Walmart are making less in purchasing power than when the economy was 50% of its size in 1968. If it was indexed to inflation, it would be $7.50 today. Instead, it's $5.15. Where is our level of expectation to at least aspire to reach the status of 1968 and tell our politicians in Washington that they index and increase their own salaries beyond inflation? They give themselves great health insurance and life insurance and all kinds of deductions, and it's about time they represent the folks back home and stop the sweet talking. You know, every member of the House of Representatives and Senate has a website, and they all talk about the internet. Guess what we discovered a couple years ago? Only two members of the House then put their voting record on their website so you could easily retrieve it. It's in some complex database. Now they're up to eight. Congressman Shays is the only member of the congressional delegation from Connecticut, puts his voting record on the way. What have they got to hide? If they're so proud of their voting record, why don't they put it at fingertip control so you can judge them by their record instead of their rhetoric, which they love you to judge them by. One thing you could all do when you get back home is just email your members of Congress and say, or write them. Actually, writing them has more effect these days. And say, okay, when are you going to do it? Congressman Shays does it. It's no complex big deal. We want to know, Senator Dodd. We want to know, Senator Lieberman, why you have never met a weapon system you don't like. We want to know why you're a toady for the insurance industry. We want to know what you're doing in Washington. You know, somebody, you've heard people say, hey, they come up to you and they say, hey, how's your social life these days? Imagine if you came up to people and said, hey, how's your civic life these days? And you know, a vibrant civic life with your friends and neighbors and coworkers is often the best social life of all. It's the best social life of all. Our rulers try to define progress in our country as if it's a never-ending curve. Sometimes it goes up slowly, sometimes it goes up faster, but it always goes up. Really? Let's take a look at the figures here. massive economic growth in the 1990s. The majority of workers in this country, according to the Department of Labor, are making less today than workers made in 1973 and 1968 and even 1979 in inflation-adjusted wages, going backwards. In 1992, 34 million Americans didn't have health insurance. It's now 45 million Americans without health insurance. Lots of them children, going backwards. In 1980, we paid the highest wages in the entire world. We're now 14th. 13 countries pay higher wages. In 1980, we were the biggest creditor of the world. They owed us. Today, we are the biggest debtor in the world. We owe them. In 1980, we had a much smaller trade deficit than we have now. When you have a trade deficit, you're exporting jobs because you're buying more from abroad than you're selling from abroad. Homelessness has increased. The criminal rackets that exploit African American, Hispanic poor in this country are having a huge expansion. People today who are poor can't afford a bank account to cash their checks. They go to the payday loan racketeers, and they go to the predatory loans, which are backed by Wall Street fancy investment firms. They go to the people who sell them furniture on a rent-to-own basis. Horrendous interest rates that in the 1970s would have been criminal violations until the financial industry abolished the usury laws, going backwards. Have we ever seen higher asthma rates than in Bridgeport, New Haven, and among children in Hartford? When have we ever seen 40% asthma rates? Lead-based poisoning, still the paint is peeling off crumbling tenement walls within a few blocks of here, and these little 2-3-year-olds, not knowing any better, are peeling them off and eating them. 200,000 lead-based poisoning cases among children in our country. Brain damage. Then they go to school and teachers call up parents, said, Julie's not doing well. Learning disability, heck, it's poisoned by lead that the landlord should have been required to contain or get rid of decades ago when the documentation was clear about the deadly effects of lead. President Bush talks about foreign weapons of mass destruction. I'll tell you about some weapons of mass destruction. That double McDonald cheeseburger is a weapon of mass destruction. That fat diet that these companies hook kids in at age 2, 3 with all kinds of seductions and advertisements and little toys. I just saw an ad on the Super Bowl a few weeks ago. I couldn't believe it. I had to get the actual transcript. It showed a little one-year-old gurgling in the lap of her or his mother. And here was the message, the simple message of this ad, which cost $1 million. 30-second ad. Here was the message while the little baby was gurgling. First step, first word, first French fry. Yeah, clog those tiny little arteries early. Don't waste any time, fat food industry. And you get obesity among children and diabetes and high blood pressure. These are the weapons of mass destruction that have to be counteracted with an expansion of the nutritional food movement in this country. Here are some more weapons of mass destruction. Try occupational hazards and trauma. They're killing 58,000 Americans a year. Try medical malpractice. A small percentage of incompetent or inattentive doctors, according to the Harvard School of Public Health, 80,000 Americans a year die in hospitals from preventable malpractice. Try 65,000 Americans who die from air pollution, from corporate emissions, preventable. Compare all these business-related criminal negligence and lobbying that results in all those casualties. Street crime in this country, 15,000 last year, homicides. 15,000. Compare that with 80,000 in medical malpractice alone. Compare the addictive industries hooking our youngsters in alcohol and drugs and tobacco. At a very young age, 400,000 American deaths a year from tobacco, thousands of deaths, over 100,000 from alcoholism. Those are weapons of mass destruction. And if we can't prohibit them, because if you drive them underground, it makes it worse, we can at least open the airwaves to a counterattack the way it occurred against the tobacco industry recently. We can have our own programs. We can have our tax dollars go to counteracting these massive, destructive, silent forms of violence that tower above the casualties that we call crime in the streets, bad as they are. We need a much more elaborate definition of preventable violence in our country. Much more. People are dying every day because they can't afford health care. Isn't that a form of violence? People are thrown in jail for minor infractions and exposed to prison rape. Enormous tragedy. People are incarcerated in solitary confinement because their term is extended, and the prison industry makes more money when their term is extended. That's why in corporate prisons, the rate of solitary confinement is more than six times higher than in government-owned prisons. Commercialism is running rampant. It's corporatizing our universities, commercializing childhood, taking over our elections and government and democracy. It's a collision between commercial interests and civic interests. And if civic interests do not rein in commercial interests, our society will continue to decay. Concentration of power and wealth will continue to be in fewer and fewer giant, unaccountable hands, taking control of our economy, our workplace, and our government. And this is what we have to do about it. We know that everybody should have a decent standard of living in this country. Western European countries have abolished poverty as we know it in this country, for the most part. The 20% child poverty in this country, 33% child poverty in the District of Columbia that doesn't have a congressional vote, 30% child poverty in New Orleans, 25% child poverty in California, and that's dire poverty. You know, the Department of Labor has another category called near poverty. Near poverty and real poverty, 45% of all kids in California, 45% in the boom golden state of America. Hey, let's get real here. In the Netherlands, child poverty is 3%. In Scandinavia, it's under 2%. They're ashamed of it. They want to do something about it. Are we going to do something about it? You know, it's often good to recite some of the successes of the citizen movement. Without the citizen movement, the abolition of slavery wouldn't got underway. Think of the courage of those people in 1820, 1840, Mississippi, North Carolina, Virginia, taking on the cotton plantations. Without citizen movements, women would not have got the right to vote. We called ourselves a democracy without women being able to vote until the Constitutional Amendment passed, 1920. Without citizen movements, workers would never have avoided the brutal working conditions of the Industrial Revolution in steel, autos, textiles, coal industry, if they didn't form trade unions. Ordinary workers doing extraordinary things. You want to see what it was like in the coal mines? Since 1890 until 2000 AD, in a declining curve, 400,000 American coal miners died from black lung disease and from trauma and collapses of coal shafts. That's more Americans who gave their lives for their coal companies than all the Americans who gave their lives in World War II, and that's just one industry. And they built the United Mine Workers and got a decent standard of living. And we worked with coal miners in the late 60s to get the Coal Miner Health and Safety Act and the coal miner pneumoconiosis compensation laws, which have dramatically improved conditions in the coal mines. If you haven't been in a coal mine, you can't imagine what it's like to go down every day and work there in the stifling coal dust and the fear of collapse. Things are better now because of citizens in the farmer populist progressive movement over 100 years ago. They took on the big banks and the railroads that were squeezing their livelihoods. Way across the country, the greatest political reform movement in our history. Ordinary people doing extraordinary things. Large numbers of people spending a little time regularly on major injustices, and they turned it around. When we started the battle with others against the tobacco industry, which was a weapon of mass addiction, all right, there were 420,000 Americans dying every year. People said tobacco industry is too powerful, you can't do anything about it, controls Congress, forget it. People said that people are addicted, they won't get themselves off the habit. Well, thousands of people spreading the word, demanding non-smoking areas in the workplace and in restaurants and on airplanes, and whistleblowers from Philip Morris and R.J. Reynolds and 60-minute exposés and the Surgeon General putting out reports. And look what happened. We went from 46% of adults smoking in 1965. It's down to 26%. It's under 20% in California. And we went to all kinds of places where no more smoking, where we have to breathe other people's smoke. We give smokers and non-smokers a breather. I remember when we started doing this on airplanes, this would never succeed. Smokers, are you kidding? They'd never tolerate it. Now, you don't see anyone smoking on airlines. And I'll bet you even the smokers are happy. Gives their lungs a break. What do they got against their lungs? Gives their lungs a break. You know, the blasphemy of today is often the commonplace of tomorrow. You see it again and again. When I was a kid, we read a book on Paul Bunyan. Some of you may remember, Paul Bunyan was a legendary lumberjack that was thousands of pounds big and yards tall. And he was born in Maine, according to the legend, at 245 pounds. He was born, and he became a big lumberjack. This was all a creation of the timber industry, by the way. They got all these books in the schools. And then he found the great blue ox that he went into the forest and brought the logs out. And then he got several lumberjacks and went right across the country, cutting trees down into Minnesota, up to Montana. And then the team broke up. And the last pages of the book had the following words. And where is Paul Bunyan going next with his blue ox? Well, he thinks he's going to head to the great forests of Alaska. And how long will Paul Bunyan be a lumberjack? And here were the final words. Until the last tree is down. Can you imagine a book like that in the schools today? You see how far we've come? And when you see how far we've come, we can see how far we can go into the future. Here. Remember when the head of the Patriots came to Hartford and said, okay, Governor Rowland, legislators, Democrats controlling the legislature, we'll bring this team down to the banks of the Connecticut River for $500 million of tax money. And if you pay for the skyboxes we can't fill with taxpayers' money and buy a practice field and build the stadium, we'll bring Hartford into the NFL. And Rowland bought it. And the Democrats and the legislature bought it. I remember Rowland got on TV and he said, this isn't just about football. It's about spirit. It's about jobs. How many jobs is a company going to create that's open for 8 days a year to begin with? How many schools could be repaired? How many clinics could be rehabilitated with $500 million? Well, the polls had 3-1 in favor of the deal. The television was going bonkers, breaking into the afternoon soap operas to announce, hey, it's coming, it's got through the Senate, it's going through the Assembly. And then a few people in Connecticut said what George Patton said in World War II. Nuts. They rolled up their sleeves, and they organized Greenwich, Connecticut stockbrokers with blue-collar workers in Willimantic in New Britain, and the Green Party was in the lead there. And they mobilized people who didn't want taxes to be going to fat cat sports corporations while needs were being ignored in 169 towns in this state.
You've been listening to Ralph Nader speaking at the New Haven Coliseum before several thousand people for his democracyrising.org event. You can get a copy of today's program by calling 1-800-735-0230. That's 1-800-735-0230. When we come back, the conclusion of Nader's speech. Stay with us.
To those who oppress,
yes,
and in particular, to the feel-safe looky-loos of life, who help the lying, the cheat, beat the naive, poor, and weak. To you I say, me today,
you ain't today.
And you tomorrow.
You tomorrow.
Me today,
today.
And you tomorrow.
You tomorrow.
You watch the world's war, hunger, pain, and horror,
something
with no sorrow. Me today,
me today.
You tomorrow.
You tomorrow.
You tomorrow.
Me today,
me today. And you tomorrow.
You, you tomorrow.
You watch horror,
you watch
with no sorrow.
With no sorrow.
Me today.
You tomorrow.
You tomorrow. When a seed is planted, it starts to grow.
And grow.
And corruption not killed in the root
and grow
will continue to pollute and pollute.
You're listening to Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman as we go to the conclusion of the speech by former presidential candidate Ralph Nader.
Mr. Kraft had a news conference, came to Hartford with a embarrassed John Rowland and said, we give up, we're going back to Boston area and build a stadium with private money, not tax money. The people have the power when it's organized. Organized money failed when it was confronted by organized people. And the lesson of our history is that organized money and concentrated wealth will always fail if it's confronted by informed, organized people who have a stamina, who have resiliency, who don't give up, and who want to look their descendants and their children and grandchildren in the eye and say, we brought you a better world. We brought you a better country. We brought you a better state. We brought you a better town. And we brought you a better neighborhood. Carry on. Our economy has grown 20-fold since 1900 in inflation-adjusted productive output per person. There was poverty in 1900. The economy puts out 20 times more production. There's poverty today, huge poverty. Why? Where's all this wealth going? Where are all these growths, economic growths going? If an economy can grow 20-fold and people have to spend 70% of their income on a ramshackle rent, Where is this economy where people are working day and night, sometimes two and three jobs, and they can't make ends meet, and they have two, three members of a family working, and they can't make ends meet, and they got to go into debt, and we have $7.2 trillion of consumer debt, all-time record. People can't make ends meet. You can't have a middle-class standard of living in Connecticut for most families with two breadwinners because so many dead-end jobs, so many $8, $7, $6 jobs an hour. Before you deduct the cost of going to work, another car, another insurance policy, another repair bill. When I was growing up in Winsted, which is a textile mill town, not very high-paying jobs, one breadwinner could afford to buy a six-room house with a 2.25% 30-year mortgage. It's now 7%. That makes a big difference, and even higher recently, and could afford a secondhand car. You can't do that today. You can't buy a house today in Connecticut. If you're in a low-wage manufacturing job. So let's get rid of this phony notion that our rulers and our governors and our power brokers are increasing progress in this country. They're driving us backwards in so many ways, driving us backwards into the future. I once thought only General Motors did that. It turns out more do that. And the question is whether the civic values are going to prevail over the commercial values. Every major religion in the world told its people not to give too much power to the profit, commercial, mercantile interest among them. Remember the reference in the Bible to Mammon. How come every major religion, east, west, north, south, came to the same conclusion? You think it was revealed truth? It was daily experience with greed. It was daily experience with lust for power. It was a daily experience with societies that didn't say to the commercial interest, you can achieve a lot of good, you've got a lot of energy, but you're going to have boundaries. You're going to have limits. You're not going to run roughshod over the critical values of democracy and justice and opportunity and tolerance and health and safety and environment and posterity in order to increase your profit, because those are the values that spell a civilized society that can look itself in the eye. Growing up corporate is something we have to delete from our minds. We all grew up corporate. This is a corporate-dominated society. I grew up corporate looking at cars the way GM wanted me to look at them. Fancy styling, hood ornaments, horsepower, different dramatic names like the Mercury, the Wildcat and the Cougar and the Cutlass Supreme, all those nice pacifist names. Ford even named the car the Marauder, the Ford Mercury Marauder, which literally means one who pillages and lays waste the countryside. How's that for an exhortation to safe driving, huh? But growing up corporate, you ought to just test yourselves. I don't mean this in any arrogant way. We all grow up corporate. We all have free ourselves. Someone asked you, who's a friend, list everything you own. And you start out, you know, a car and furniture and clothing and computers and maybe a home or a condo. And then you get down to paper clips. You're down to paper clips. You can't think of anything else you own. And you say, and the person says to you, you own something else, don't you know? You say, what else do I own? Well, don't you know with other Americans, you own a third of the United States of America, the great public lands with the huge natural resources that are being virtually given away to corporations out of Washington? Don't you know? Don't you know? Don't you know that you own the public airwaves and that we should have our own audience network, at least for an hour a day, or our own radio and TV stations, having for the first time since 1927, why don't we charge the radio and TV stations rent? They're the tenants, they pay us no rent and keep us off the air. Why don't we charge them rent, use the money for community radio, community television, to bring the great talent, artistic and otherwise in our country, to the people of the United States. Why? There's no place where we grow up corporate than accepting the commercial standards of beauty, which produce a lot of pain for especially a lot of youngsters. It's a commercial standard of beauty that's skin deep and body shape. It's not real beauty of compassion and wit and care and concern and helping one another. Those are the real definitions of beauty. Yet we're controlled by these commercial definitions of beauty in the cosmetic industry. We grow up, when you hear the word crime or the word violence or welfare or regulation, we think of street crime and street violence and wars and poor people on welfare and government regulation. Well, there's far more of your tax dollars going to corporate welfare, subsidies, payoffs, handouts, you name it. It's going wild in state capitals and in Washington. There's far more preventable death and injury due to corporate misdeeds and criminal negligence in the environmental workplace and product area than any street crime, bad as that is. There's far more financial crime. I mean, just think of the billions of dollars, the trillions of dollars that millions of Americans have had shredded from them because of the corporate crime wave that the headlines are blaring forth recently. And so when you, on your way out, you go to these action categories here. They're very, very well situated here. And you have them in five major categories that encompass a lot of the tables. And they want you to pick up the materials or to join their ongoing causes. For example, as you might have known, the Greater New Haven NAACP is having a July 1st, 6 p.m., in front of the Hamden Middle School on the whole issue of toxic dump waste and environmental racism. And that's very important for those in the Hamden area to show your support in these regions. All of you have been given this progressive directory. It's very handy. Whenever you grumble about something, there's a group here that's ready to help you do something about it. And it's got the phone numbers and everything, so take it with you. But the action centers, straight ahead economic inequality, and straight ahead is the energy and environment, and then the other action centers on both sides are economic inequality, civil and human rights, grassroots democracy, and trade and global justice. We have had a chance to talk about WTO and NAFTA and those autocratic systems of international governance that are undermining our own democratic processes in secret decision-making in Geneva and elsewhere. As, you know, we have enough time trying to reach the politicians in Hartford and Washington without trying to reach the secret rulers of WTO in Geneva, Switzerland, for heaven's sake. Unelected bureaucrats, unaccountable bureaucrats, secretive bureaucrats. I wrote this book, Crashing the Party, because I want to answer the question, what does it take for all of us to make important changes? And the answer, among others, is it doesn't take all that much. We think it takes a lot more. We think it takes a huge disruption of our routine. It doesn't. 500 million hours were spent watching the Super Bowl in early February or January. 500 million hours organized in key congressional districts over the next year would get us universal health insurance. I have no doubt of that. But we didn't have anywhere near that in 1993. We didn't have anywhere near that when President Truman proposed it in 1950 and was rebuked by AMA-dominated Congress at that time. All these successes that I mentioned earlier were due to a few thousand people putting forth facts and values supported passively by millions of other Americans. It doesn't take that much. Margaret Mead, the great anthropologist, was once asked, "Professor Mead, can a few people make a difference?" She replied, "Little else ever has. Little else ever has." So I hope some of you will read the agenda in Crashing the Party, especially page 319, which is a major overdue leap forward in America that's within our grasp, that is supported by most people. And it deals with many of the issues that you heard by my predecessors and in my remarks this evening. It is important to fight against the trivialization of our time and our lives. We have to have a higher estimate of our own significance in life and what we pass on to future generations. We have to become good ancestors. We have to look in the eye of our children and grandchildren and not be blushed and not be embarrassed when in their innocent 10-year-old questions they say, "Why are we living in such a tormented world?" We don't want to have to answer them that we didn't have enough time for our country and our world and our future descendants. We don't want to say to them we were too busy watching the rerun of Cheers on television. You know, you've heard people make organic analogies to civic action. Let me make one that I think is authentic. The Mississippi River, one of the greatest rivers in the world, starts with two drops of water. One in northern Minnesota and one in Montana, feeding the Missouri River, which feeds into the Mississippi. Those drops of water become rivulets. The rivulets join together to become brooks. The brooks join together to become streams. The streams join together to become rivers. And the rivers join together to become the mighty tributaries that make up the mighty Mississippi, the greatest single natural asset in our country. It all started with a drop of water. It all starts with a few minutes of our time with millions of other Americans, until civic time becomes the most enjoyable time of our lives, because we're alleviating our pain, our anguish, our anxiety, our frustration, our sense of powerlessness. That's where true enjoyment comes from. And I hope that you leave. Do you leave the New Haven Coliseum even more vitalized than you entered it, even more connected, even more resolute, even more determined that you will make your mark in the great advancement of justice in our country and in our world? Thank you very much.
Ralph Nader speaking at the New Haven Coliseum to a crowd of several thousand at his event sponsored by democracyrising.org. And that does it for today's program. If you'd like to order a cassette copy, you can call 1-800-735-0230. That's 1-800-735-0230. And by the way, we have some producer positions open at Democracy Now! You can email us your resume at job@democracynow.org. And if you've already emailed and haven't gotten a response, email again at job@democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced by Chris Abrams, Miranda Kennedy, Lizzie Ratner, Michael Yeh, and Anthony Sloan is our engineer and music maestro. Our email address is mail@democracynow.org. Our website is democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for listening to another edition of Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now!
The company's been good to me. I can't believe they didn't tell me all that they knew. The company wouldn't lie to me, but now that I can't work, I don't know what I'm gonna do for you. Two hours later, my daddy was dead. The company's been good to us, was all my mama said.